Now we both kinda like it. Now we both kinda know that if we're ever gonna make it, we just need to let go.
You're listening to the Crosscutting Concerns podcast. I'm your host, Matt Groves. Please visit the site at crosscuttingconcerns.com, where you can subscribe, browse the archives, contact me, read show notes, and leave a comment. I'm recording this podcast on October 12th, 2017, but if all goes correctly, it's going to be published on November 6th, just in time for holiday shopping. This is my guest's third time on the show. He is not a developer, but he has done pretty much everything else, including a PM, BA, QA, writing screenplays, and performing stand-up comedy. He actually just performed last night. Matt Bach, how are you?
I'm doing great. Anytime I get a chance to talk to my intellectual superiors, I'm always happy, so.
I don't know. You have a lot more letters than I do, PM, BA, and QA.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, BYOB. It doesn't really necessarily mean anything.
All right, so I've got you on here because it's holiday shopping season, and I want to know, am I ever going to see an NES Classic or an SNES Classic in person? I just missed out on the big ThinkGeek sale, and I don't know if I'm ever going to see any of these systems in my house.
Yes, you will. And here's the thing. You asked two questions there, so I'll address them separately. They both have variations on the same answer. The more timely one is the Super Nintendo version of the two, which was released a week or two ago. Of the two, it's the only one I've actually ever seen in a store. Was actually at Best Buy the day that it was released, and they did have one in the security cage. They had tickets that they had handed out to people that waited for it to open, and they were holding ones for people who had gotten tickets until noon. And I was sitting in Best Buy, and there was one sitting in the cage, and the person came back at 11:55. So I did not get one, but I have actually seen one in the wild other than someone that actually owned one, which I did see of the original. But this weekend, if you go to Target or a Best Buy or a Walmart, you should be able to get one because they're supposed to be getting new stock in probably as early as tomorrow, but more likely it'll either be out Saturday or Sunday.
And by tomorrow, you mean October 13th, not...
I'm sorry, yes, since this is time shifted.
Yeah, sorry, people listening. Hopefully you're having better luck in the future than we are this week. Let's talk about this SNES Classic a little bit and why it's such a hot commodity. There's some very interesting games on this system. One of them has never been released before by Nintendo, Star Fox 2. And the other one is Yoshi's Island, has only been released by Nintendo once, I believe, maybe twice ever in the history of Nintendo, and that's Yoshi's Island. Can you talk about these games a little bit? What do you know about them?
Star Fox 2, which lots of people have played in some shape or form because there were a lot of pre-release versions that somehow made it out onto various ROM sites and things like that. The versions I've seen of it have been nearly complete versions. And basically what killed the Star Fox 2 release, as I understand it, was actually the PlayStation. And what I mean by that is, if you look at the life cycle of the Super Nintendo versus the life cycle of the PlayStation, the Super Nintendo was kind of tailing down as the PlayStation was ramping up. If you looked at it one-to-one, a lot of the stuff that was revolutionary with the original Star Fox and built upon a little bit with Star Fox 2 was done or was being done so much better with the PlayStation. They, I guess, just didn't want to put out something that didn't compare favorably.
Right. So maybe let's talk about Star Fox a little bit. The original Star Fox that was released by Nintendo for the Super Nintendo, it had a special chip in the cartridge called the Super FX chip, which allowed it to render polygons, not polygons as we know them today, but single color, simple polygons, only a handful on the screen at a time, very low frame rate. But at the time, I don't know if you remember when this came out, at the time, it was pretty amazing.
No, it was revolutionary. And it's weird when you look back on what was amazing compared to like what is, oh gosh, that game's terrible now. But yeah, I remember I had, and I still have, the original Star Fox from when it originally came out. And it was, I think, one of at least three but maybe four different games that were released with the Super FX chip. It was never something that was very, very common across Nintendo's games. Star Fox itself was, there was nothing like it at the time. And I believe there was actually kind of a similar thing on the Genesis side that was, there was a racing game, a similar thing that had a special polygon rendering chip in it. I don't remember specifically what the title was, but it was something that was a big deal at the time.
Yeah, I think maybe Virtual Racing came to Genesis with a chip in it, or maybe it came to 32X or something like that.
Yeah, I think that might be right. I know Stunt Racing FX was another one of the Super Nintendo games, which I actually got about a year ago, believe it or not, because I'd never actually seen that one before. And it was like, that was one of those ones that it was worth it to me to actually go out and purchase. So I did pick up that one, but it was at the time just revolutionary. When playing it back, I don't think it has the replayability as much as a lot of other games of even the same time frame. Because even though you can pick different paths to get to the final goal, which was somewhat unique at the time, it is almost a kind of a on-the-rails type shooter in a lot of ways, that it's not very open space like most flying games you would consider to be.
It's kind of like if you ever played Panzer Dragoon, kind of a rail shooter, polygon-based.
Yes.
Star Fox 2 was a little more open-ended, though. It actually used what's called the Super FX 2 chip, which is a slightly more advanced version, and you could fly around a little more freely in sort of open areas. In a way, it was almost like a prototype of Super Mario 64, which we've discussed in the past is your favorite game, I believe.
Oh, yeah, and the spiritual, if not true, successor of that game is also coming out in the next couple of weeks, so...
Super Mario Odyssey.
Yes.
We'll get to that when we talk about the Nintendo Switch later on. So Yoshi's Island also used the Super FX 2 chip, which might not be obvious if you've seen pictures of it. It's a side view platforming game, but it did make use of Super FX for some interesting backgrounds and special effects. Some people say this is the reason that Nintendo has not released it on Virtual Console or anything else until now, because of some hardware issues with that. Have you ever played Yoshi's Island?
I haven't played it on the Super Nintendo, but I'm almost positive it was one of the games that was released as a Game Boy Advance version of it. There was a handful of them, Super Mario World, Zelda Link to the Past, and I believe Mario 2 Yoshi's Island were different ones that I played on the Game Boy. I never played on the full-size console.
That's correct. There was a Game Boy Advance series called Super Mario Advance, and I believe this was released as Super Mario Advance 3 or 4 or something like that.
So you had two different numbers that weren't the same in the same title. That's not confusing at all.
Exactly. There were a couple other Super FX games. None of them were terribly notable, but Star Fox 2 being unreleased and Yoshi's Island is two of the big draws for this system. There's a bunch of other games on this list. We don't have to go through all of them, but I sent you a list over earlier. What do you think is the weakest game in this collection, if there is one? We talked about the NES Classic last time. There were a few games on there that were not really strong titles. What's the situation this time around?
When you look at the ones that are there, I can understand why all of them are there. There aren't any that really jump out as far as, like, I don't understand why that one is there. Because with only 21 titles, there's not a lot of room for things to kind of hide in the weeds, I guess. If you had to pick one, and this is just more a me thing than it is a, I think, general conception thing, is I would say Final Fantasy III. And the only reason I say that is because that's not my particular genre of game. But, I mean, if you look at the title list pretty much front to back is pretty solid. There are ones that I might shift in a different version of the same thing, like Donkey Kong Country. I might have gone with 2 or 3 rather than 1, even though I know 1 is kind of rated as like the higher of the 3 Donkey Kong Country games. But all of these games are really, really solid.
There's even another title on here, Earthbound, which is a cult favorite. Again, it's an RPG, maybe not your cup of tea, but it's a cult favorite game that Nintendo has kind of treated as a black sheep, if you will. And so it's another game on here that just makes it a lot more appealing to those hardcore Nintendo fans.
And I think that's probably partially just because it's not just a U.S. release, because Earthbound was released as, I believe, Mother was the actual overseas title for it. And it's a really, really popular game. Actually, my kids play it, believe it or not.
Wow.
I had got a translated version. I think I'm correct on that. And I don't remember for which system it was for, but it was actually originally in Japanese, but they played it.
Earthbound was actually Mother 2 in Japan.
Okay.
There was a Mother that was, it was actually released on Virtual Console recently. but it was unreleased before as well. So Nintendo taking some titles out of the closet, Star Fox 2 and Earthbound, which they call it, I think, Earthbound Zero or something like Earthbound Origins, maybe. I don't know exactly. And there's actually a third one, Mother 3, on Game Boy Advance that's not been released officially in the United States either. If I look at these titles, I really like F-Zero a lot. I played that a lot when I had the Super Nintendo, but it's not a terribly...
Doesn't hold up?
It's not a very deep game. It's a very cool tech demo. There's no multiplayer race in it. It's just sort of, you know, what you see, and that's pretty much it. So that's probably the weakest title, I think, on the SNES Classic.
And if you look at it, of the 21, I probably had at least half of these. If I did, I still do have them in a box somewhere. You know, Super Nintendo came out, I believe, in 1990, if I'm correct. It's 1990 or 1991. And so that was kind of my system I had for my mid to late college years. You know, we spent a lot of times playing Mario Kart.
Yeah.
I mean, in the dorms, so.
Yeah, that would be the superior racer, I think, to F-Zero. It's multiplayer, the same sort of scaling effects are on there.
Mode 7.
Yeah, Mode 7. And Mario Kart, of course, kicked off the huge Mario Kart franchise, which is still going strong today. I'm going to say something that's probably a little controversial here. I'm a huge Mega Man fan. I never really liked the Mega Man X series all that much. And I'm not really sure why. I can't put my finger on why. But I always liked the traditional Mega Man series better.
I wouldn't disagree with you on that. I don't understand why they're the same series. Because they're not, but they are. There's like this, your regular platformers, which is, you know, your Mega Man, Mega Man 2, Mega Man 3, etc.
Right.
And then they even had recent releases with 8-bit-ish graphics on modern systems. Those all have kind of like the same feel, whereas the X series didn't to me. They didn't play quite the same. They almost seemed almost like a knockoff in a way to me.
Yeah, a little bit. I think it was a little bit jarring. Maybe I was expecting something different when I first rented this game, and it just wasn't what I was used to. I must have logged a million hours of Mega Man 2 when I was a kid to get Mega Man X, and it's just something completely a different direction to the series.
That's how I felt with the Super Mario Galaxy games. And that's one of the ones that will make me be a heretic to a lot of people. I will buy a system for a Mario game by itself. But the Mario Galaxy games, it was just this weird... It's not a 2D platformer. It's not really a 3D platformer. It's kind of this two-thirds D platformer. I played it and I solved it, but I didn't enjoy it the same way that I have even like the classic, like new Super Mario Brothers that they've had on different systems, or Super Mario World or Super Mario 64 or any of those, Mario Sunshine, all of those. The Galaxy series, I just never really loved.
I really enjoyed the Galaxy game. I didn't play Galaxy 2. I didn't really play Mario Sunshine, but yeah, I think I enjoyed the Galaxy the most of the 3D, in quotes, Mario games. Super Ghouls and Ghosts. How do you feel about Super Ghouls and Ghosts?
I played the arcade version. I never played the Super Nintendo version.
I don't think I ever did either, but it is a notoriously difficult, unfairly difficult game. And that is maybe another choice for a title in here that, take it or leave it.
You're not going to a system like this, I think, to discover something. It's more of a nostalgia trip. So, and not that there aren't undiscovered gems that you haven't necessarily played before, but I don't think that's kind of the sell for this. That's not the impetus for buying it.
That's true. If this were all obscure titles, I'd probably be able to find one pretty easily.
I look at the titles and pretty solid list of titles, but I went through and I just started rattling off what I considered to be omissions. And I understand why some of them are not there. But there are some things that seem to be pretty weird to me that they're not there just based on where they fall in the legacy of the Super Nintendo system as far as, like, you know, how they are considered to be some of the top games.
Well, I got to hear your list of omissions.
I already talked about Donkey Kong Country 2 and 3.
Sure.
I understand it's like you don't need to have all three. Mario All-Stars, that was a big one to me because, and I know they had all the Mario games in the NES Classic or the NES Mini, but Mario All-Stars was the 16-bit update to the three Mario games plus the unreleased second Mario game that came before Super Mario 2. To me, that was just kind of a glaring omission. Zombies Ate My Neighbors,
really?
Fantastic game. I love that game. And I think the most surprising thing is the complete lack of sports titles outside of Super Punch-Out.
At the time, I remember Genesis really being the place to go for sports games. What games do you think were omitted from SNES?
Genesis did kind of have the EA, if you compared them head-to-head, if you were going to play like NHL, the NHL series or the Madden series, they did play better on the Genesis for the most part. So there's any of the EA sports titles, whether it be NHL, Madden, college sports or college football, you're missing Super Tecmo Bowl. Given that the original Tecmo Bowl was on the NES version of this, that was a little bit surprising. And I logged hundreds of hours on Super Tecmo Bowl, Super Tecmo Bowl 2, and Super Tecmo Bowl 3, all on the series. Earthworm Jim.
I'm sure that's a licensing problem right there.
That probably was. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, probably also a licensing problem. Super Star Wars, Super Empire Strikes Back, or Super Return of the Jedi, also probably licensing issues.
Yep.
Those are all really good and difficult games. And along the same thing with the sports, you have NBA Jam, once again, probably a licensing issue. There was Super Tennis. Not a great game, but there's no cost for them to add that to this system because it's a Nintendo first title.
Hmm.
NCAA Basketball, which used Mode 7.
Yeah.
Not a great game, but it's something they could throw in. Super Play Action Football. Any of the Nintendo titles. There's no golf games on here. There's a lot of things that I think that from a licensing issue wouldn't have been an issue that just seemed to be weird omissions to me.
I was thinking at the same time you mentioned NBA Jam. I remember playing a lot of NBA Live 95, NBA Live 96. Those maybe wouldn't be great because they're literally dated, the games are, so that may be a licensing thing there with the players' names as well. But those were great games. I spent a lot of time on the SNES.
We had leagues that we played of NHL 94. One set of people playing on a Genesis over here, one set of people playing on a Super Nintendo over there. Just the complete lack of sports sounds a little surprising to me.
Well, I want to move on from the SNES Classic, get to some other topics. But before we do that, if you happen to find one of these in the store, would you recommend that a listener would buy them?
Absolutely. And one last thing before we move on. You're a developer. I'm not a developer, so I can't speak to this. So I'm going to throw this into your corner.
All right.
When I've written code myself for my own personal stuff, well, first of all, it usually doesn't work and I have to call someone to fix it. But I always throw in little Easter eggs in case somebody is trying to figure out my code, whether it be, you know, a clever saying or whatever. But I put in little things for that. And I know that having reviewed other people's code, they sometimes do that as well. This system is, in theory, a closed system.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way to update it. There's no online presence for it.
Right.
It is out of the box the way it will be forever. Just like its NES predecessor, it is hackable. But when you actually hook the machine up to hack it, there is a message in there from the developers that says to enjoy the system.
Wow, in the SNES one?
Yes.
Wow.
To me, that is implied consent.
I don't think that'll hold up in the court of law, but I think I see where you're going for there, that they know it's inevitable.
Right.
Yeah, I'll give it a thumbs up as well. Definitely, if you see this one, buy it. At the very least, I will buy it from you if you don't want it.
And I think this one does come with two controllers as well.
That's true. It also does. It's a little higher price compared to the NES Classic. Fewer games, but does have a controller. And some of these games, compared to the NES, like the RPG games, you'll get hours and weeks and months of playtime out of them. So definitely worth the money.
Of all these, what's your number one of the 21?
Oh, boy. Number one. Legend of Zelda Link to the Past is possibly my favorite Zelda game, maybe number two. I think that one would be my favorite on this system right now.
Zelda Link to the Past and the original Super Mario World, two games that I have completed on different versions of different systems, on the Virtual Console, on the Wii, on the Nintendo, Super Nintendo itself, on the Game Boy Advanced series of them. So those two for me are kind of neck and neck, but Zelda was mind-blowing for me at the time.
Yeah, tremendous game. Great story, great graphics, great gameplay. It's really one of the best games of all time, period.
Yes.
All right, let's move on to something maybe a little less exciting. Atari has announced a brand new console. This is not a flashback or anything. It's called the Atari Box or something like that. I don't remember the exact name.
Atari Box is correct.
Yeah, okay. Very creative name. I don't think it's actually out yet.
Nope.
But there has been some information released about it. The price point is pretty ridiculous for what you're getting. It's a Linux-based set-top box, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I don't know, what else do you know about it?
You've hit most of the points. It's it's been very, very vague. It has the possibility of getting it with fake wood trim on it. I know right. that's one thing that's been released. it has been called a look to the past with also looking towards the future, which is very, very specific. I don't know if you remember or if you've even heard of the Ouya.
I do remember that one, yeah.
I believe that was one of the first things I ever purchased via crowdsourcing.
Okay.
It was also the first thing I ever resold after I received it.
Oh, they actually shipped them?
Yes.
Okay.
I had it for, I think, 2 or 3 days. And in that time, I realized that it was not really anything that I needed to have. And since there was a demand, I turned around and got rid of it. But at the same time, it was a little bit more reasonably priced. This whole thing to me almost seems like a fishing expedition, or they're just kind of trying to take the pulse of, is there an interest out there? I don't want to call it vaporware. Have you ever heard of the M2?
I have not. What is the M2?
There was a couple consoles that didn't really fall cleanly into the different families of whether it be Nintendo or Sega and later Sony and Microsoft. There was the, I can't even pronounce it, it's Matsushita, I think, group, which were kind of the brains behind the 3DO, along with Panasonic. The successor to the 3DO was supposed to be the M2. And there was a bunch of tech demos that were really amazing as far as what it could do, as far as scaling and different things that are common now, but just were, you know, miles ahead of what was possible at the time. The M2 was going to come out. It was going to be an add-on to the 3DO. Then it was going to be its own console. Then it was going to be third-party outsourced to a different group. Then it was just going to be a technology stack. And then it completely disappeared, never having really had anything come of it. I kind of get that feeling with this, except that there's even less detail about it. When you're asking for what I would consider to be an unreasonable amount of money, you have to give something that can make it palatable, that makes it, what is the reason behind the price point? When you can build something by going down to Micro Center for about $30 that is going to be just as powerful, and you can custom program yourself to do probably everything this system will be able to do, you got to wow me with something. You got to give me something. And nothing I've seen indicates that this has anything that really would have that grab for me.
I mean, they haven't really announced much at all. Any new software for it, or if it's going to ship with old Atari games. There's not really anything, any meat to talk about here. And the wood trim is pretty much the main detail.
They had a trailer.
Yeah, there was a trailer, but it was very much a, you know, we don't really have anything yet. Here's our prototype design. So, yeah, I don't know. The fact that it has Atari on it is intriguing to me. The fact that they're going for a retro vibe with the wood trim is kind of intriguing. But when they released the price point and the fact that it was just running Linux on pretty much off-the-shelf hardware, I just don't understand what they're going for.
I think, you know, you look at the way that the NES retro stuff, throw out all the Atari flashback stuff and the Genesis consoles and all the stuff we talked about last time. Just look at except for the Nintendo versions of it. If you look at the Nintendo stuff and how there was so much excitement, probably possibly driven by scarcity.
Sure.
How much it was talked about, and you know, the fact that stores had to put up signs that said, no, we don't have this in stock. And you know, Atari, with Blade Runner 2049 coming out, was a big, big name. And Atari, in its original form, Nolan Bushnell, I believe, right, hasn't existed for ages. It has been sold and resold and repackaged and IP sold off to, that now it has nothing to do with the original company other than the name. But it is trying, I think, to build up some kind of excitement on nostalgia alone with absolutely nothing behind it. And I did send you an email earlier about another Atari-ish thing, not from Atari, which I think is what the Atari box should be if they wanted it to succeed.
Sure. Can we talk about that?
I have some details about this. Unfortunately, I don't have a release date on it because I could not find anything other than the initial announcement. and the approximate price point of about $80. If you look at all consoles, all major consoles, excluding, you know, the smaller ones like Vectrex and stuff like that, there have been ways to not emulate, but to play your old cartridges on new hardware to output them to like modern devices.
Okay.
The Atari 2600 has been completely left out of that, which would be the one thing that the Atari box possibly would have. There's a series of different systems called the Retron series. And we talked about the Retron 5 a little bit in one of our last podcasts, but they are jumping from the Retron 5 to the Retron 77.
Okay.
Which is an Atari retro console. HDMI output, 1080p output, can use the original controllers, can play original Atari cartridges on it. To me, that's huge. From what little I've been able to gather about it, it is not an emulation. It's actually true hardware, which means that your exception games like your Pitfall 2, and there's a handful of other ones that won't run in certain scenarios, it should be able to run everything. Just like the Atari Flashback Portable, to me, that's a must-have. It's because I got to be able to play games from when I was 5 years old and 1080p, even though, you know, the resolution is only probably like 120. But to me, that's a huge thing, especially if they do similar to how the Flashback series is, where they have built-in, but they also have the cartridge slot. That is the one thing that has been missing from every Atari Flashback. There's things out there where you could actually go and you could mod them to run a cartridge. I thought about trying to do that, but I know that I would never get it to work. I'd get close, but I'd never actually get it to work. But this is something where I have a whole box of old carts I would love to be able to play on a regular TV with the original controllers, the rubberized controllers. I've hooked up my existing Atari 2600 to, you know, a regular TV, and it's almost unplayable just because going over the RF connection is so bad when you're playing it on a 47 or a 52 or a 55-inch TV. You have that digital output with HDMI. Well, it's going to look as good as those blocky graphics can look, but it's still going to be, to me, that is a huge thing. That's a blast. That would be a must-buy.
Atari box, we're going to say just hold off on getting excited for anything there yet until anything resembling details is released.
Give me something to base an opinion on other than the fact that it's way more expensive than it should be.
But for the Retron 77, which is a cool name, by the way, $80 sounds like a good deal to me if you're into Atari. Sounds like it can't miss.
And it has the wood trim on it as well. So, I mean, that's right there. Fits right in with my plush carpeting.
Love the wood trim. All right, one more thing I wanted to ask you. And this is something I'm sort of struggling with myself this year. The buy, not buy decision on the Nintendo Switch. I own every Nintendo console except for the Switch at this point, which just came out last year, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
There are a handful of really interesting, really amazing games for it right now. I don't know if I should pull the trigger on it this holiday season or not. What are your thoughts on the Nintendo Switch?
All right, I have one. I've never played it, but that's because it's not mine. I sold it to one of my kids just because I wanted to have it. Now you can actually get them, so it's a little bit different. At that time, I figured if my kids didn't want it, worst comes to worst, I could probably talk to somebody at work and say, hey, if somebody has a kid that wants this, because they were possible to find at the time. It's not like I'd have to flip it on Craigslist or something like that, but I could have if I had to. Got Zelda. It's the only game that has for the Switch right now, which is an incredible game from everything I've read. I've watched it. Mm-hmm. I've watched him play it. I've seen videos on YouTube of people playing it. The problem I have, and the reason I actually haven't picked it up and played it at all, is there's just not a library for it. You look at the total number of titles for the Switch, there's probably less than 30. Of the ones that I can think of, Zelda, and yeah, that's probably about it. That is something that, okay, this is the reason to have this console. They released Zelda for the Wii U as well, so that loses a little weight there. For me, and this is just me, and from what you said earlier, it might not hold as true for you. If I didn't have a Switch, I would be buying one this month anyway.
Because of Mario Odyssey.
Mario Odyssey comes out. The Switch becomes mine for about 3 weeks as I walk my way through it. I've seen some of the demos on store displays. It looks very much like the next evolution of 64 or Sunshine, or I can't remember what the one on the Wii U was called with the cats. If I hadn't gotten a Switch before, I wouldn't have paid more than retail for it, but I would have bought one, and I would have bought just Mario for that experience.
Mario Odyssey, to me, looks like an interesting change in approach to Mario games. Mario games are great. They are really good games, but you might make the argument that Nintendo's kind of been coasting on those for a while. They haven't really innovated much. With Mario Odyssey, it looks to be a whole different approach to a Mario game, and that is very interesting to me. I don't know if it's interesting to my kids. They haven't shown much interest in platformers, with some minor exceptions, but for me, I think that might be worth it to at least check that out for myself.
You talked about kids. The whole portability of it isn't a huge selling point for me in and of itself. If you travel, if you're on a plane or you're in a hotel or whatever, I think that would be a great option because it's something that's a little bit more robust than an iPad game or, you know, an Android mobile phone game. It's something that's actually like a real legit current gen console game. To me, it depends on your situation. It depends on your likes. The catalog of titles to me right now is very disappointing. The fact that they released Mario Kart, which is the same Mario Kart that was on the Wii U, I don't feel the need to buy the same game twice. And the weird thing is, my other son, not the son whose Switch it is because they can't share things because that's the way kids are, he plays Super Smash Brothers and Mario Kart on the Wii U all the time. So maybe Christmas time I might get Mario Kart for the Switch just so that he can play that. And then I'm getting the Mario game for me. That'll be 2 weeks out, I think it is. That's going to be here, and I'm going to be playing it, and my wife's not going to see me for a while.
And again, listeners, that's 2 weeks from October 12th. So it's going to be in the stores by the time you're hearing this. So one interesting thing, my kids play the Wii U all the time. They play Minecraft, they play baseball games. The tablet is great because they can play a game on the tablet. They don't have to use the TV. But the range for the tablet isn't great. So they can't take it back to their room or into the kitchen or something before they lose signal. With the Switch, though, they can take it and then go anywhere in the house. So portable doesn't necessarily have to mean you're on an airplane or you're in a hotel room. It could just mean, you know, down the hallway. I don't know if that's worth a couple $100 just for that minor upgrade, but that is something to think about with portability.
And the battery on the Switch is, the one thing I've seen about the Wii U is the controller, which I actually think is pretty decent for the Wii U, doesn't last that long. I actually bought an extended battery for it to give it a little bit more life, but still it's you know, about 4 hours tops. The Switch, I think, is probably more like the 7, 8, 9 range.
Switch, you've already got one, so you give it a thumbs up. For Mario Odyssey, at least. I don't have one yet. It's going to end up in my house eventually. It's just a question of, is it going to be this year, or am I going to buy it secondhand from someone a couple of years from now?
Is it going to be the $299 Switch, or is it going to be the $199 Switch, basically?
Right, exactly.
And the other thing about the Switch, and this is something that Nintendo got right with the Wii U, that they got wrong with the Switch. Since you have a Wii U, I don't know what you guys use as far as controllers outside of the control pad itself, if they ever play multiple people at the same time. We have so many of the original Wii controllers that, I mean, you can't walk into a room in the house without finding one in a couch cushion. I also got a couple of the regular game pads. I think they're called the Pro controllers for the Wii U. Those don't work with the Switch. The secondary controllers, a second set of controllers for the Switch, costs more than a controller for PS4 does, for Xbox One does, which I think is a little ridiculous. A little disappointing that the Pro controller from the Wii U is not compatible with the Switch.
But the Switch does come with two controllers, though. That's correct, right? They are kind of small.
Yes.
So it's really one regular size controller or two tiny controllers. That's basically the choice you have to make.
Yes, exactly.
I think that's about it, unless you have anything else you wanted to bring up, close out the show.
The whole classic lineup is a whole secondary tier thing that Nintendo is focusing on for the future. I think today, unofficially, the Game Boy one was mentioned, or maybe not through official channels, but it definitely hit the rumor mill as far as a Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advanced version of the classic consoles. I'm hoping that Nintendo learns something from the current launch and the launch last year, there's a difference between absolutely saturating the market and having way more than people would ever want to buy, say like an Atari Jaguar situation. But there's also the way things are today, there's no reason for it to be impossible for them to produce enough to get close to demand. These are not next-gen systems. These are not things that are cutting edge. This is fairly basic tech that's inside them. So I'm hoping that they're actually going to have a more robust pipeline for supply. And I understand that there's a reason why they probably didn't foresee how successful the first one was going to be. But even the second one, where they doubled or tripled, they're still so far below. And they're leaving money on the table. I'm a Nintendo fan. I've had every Nintendo console except for the Virtual Boy. I want to see them succeed in both their new stuff and their classic lines. But in order for them to succeed, they need to give me a way to give them their money.
Nintendo works in mysterious ways. And it seems like they always have a problem with getting enough supply. There is some hope, though. The SNES Classic is going secondhand right now for about $130-ish. Which, if you compare that to what the NES Classic was going for, up to $300 sometimes, that is hope that they did increase the supply a little better this time around. I have $90 with Nintendo's name on it, and I can't give it to them right now. So I absolutely sympathize with what you're saying. I think we can hope in one hand.
Yeah, yeah, I know how the rest of that goes.
Game Boy Classic, I didn't even think about that. I was thinking they would be on to N64 Classic next. But yeah, Game Boy makes sense. Virtual Boy Classic, we won't see that, though. All right. Is there anything else you'd like to promote before we wrap up the show?
Hopefully in late November, early December, my next book will be out. I'll provide you a link for that, assuming that it actually does. I'm in the right place for that. I'm close, but I've been spending a lot of my mental writing cycles on the comedy right now. So I haven't been able to kind of like dot those I's and cross those T's. But my new book called Broken People should be out by the end of the year.
Excited to check that one out when it's available. My guest today has been Matt Bach. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
This has been the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast, produced and recorded by Matt Groves, 2017. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media and leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you downloaded this podcast. For show notes, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com. This episode is recorded under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. Hosting for this podcast was made possible in part by Microsoft. It was recorded and mixed with the help of Audacity, Skype, and Camtasia Recorder. The theme music is by The Dirty Truckers. You can buy the music on Amazon or iTunes. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on a future episode, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com to submit your name and idea.